Hello once again, welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Patrick Donges, filling in today for Ray Graff. We're talking automotive maintenance and repair and cars this afternoon with Gordon Fricke. He's the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years, beginning at Factory Mechanics Training School in Wolfsburg, Germany back in 1979. From there, he moved on to earn an associate's degree in automotive mechanics from Hudson Valley Community College and a Bachelor of Science degree in vocational technical education at the State University of New York's College of Technology in Utica. Prior to starting his own business in Hoosick Falls, Gordon worked as an automotive technician, service advisor, and assistant service manager at the Annis Corporation. Say that right? Annis Corporation.
Correct.
At a Volkswagen, Porsche, and Audi dealership based in Natick, Massachusetts. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the Vox Pops. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much.
You can call us at 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. And of course, you can post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and that's all one big jumble, WAMC Vox Pop together. You can email us to voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon, what's going on?
Well, it's beginning to get busy with travel, people thinking about using their cars more now that winter's gone, and a lot of tire changes are still occurring, and people thinking about maybe the air conditioner. So, you know, things are in change mode.
People gearing up for big road trips?
I think so, yep.
Okay. You know, my girlfriend had a situation where she was told that she needed her air conditioning recharged. What does that mean?
Well, there may have been a time many, many years ago where that was much more of a expected or routine thing to have done to your car. I think in the early years, trying to contain that pressurized refrigerant was very hard. So maybe every year that refrigerant leaked out over time very slowly, and you had to get it recharged. I have a lot of people ask me that. My air conditioning works fine. Am I supposed to do anything with it? Am I supposed to get it recharged? And the answer is no. It, as long as it's performing properly and cooling the car, you really don't have to do anything other than maybe maintaining the condenser, which is the unit out in front of the radiator.
Okay.
You need to make sure it's not full of bugs and debris and twigs and leaves and things like that. And a lot of cars today have a cabin filter, and that filters the air that's coming into the car, which is a really nice thing. It's going to take pollen out, and it's going to take dust and all kinds of things that, particularly if you have allergies, is very beneficial.
You're not driving and sneezing the
exactly.
whole way.
And if that pollen filter starts to get plugged up, you'll notice that you don't have the airflow you used to. So there's a few things that need to be looked at, but not a annual recharge.
Okay, so until your AC stops, you probably don't need to get it
exactly.
recharged.
Okay, yep.
All right, good to know. I'll let her know. All right, let's take our first call here, Bonnie in Ashfield. Bonnie, you're on the Vox Pop.
Hello, how are you guys today?
Great, thanks.
Good, thanks for taking my call. I've owned a couple of Jeep Liberties. One was a 2003, one was a 2006. And they both kind of had the same problem where the engine light was coming on, and it was because the gas cap at first was something was messed up with it. So I got a new gas cap. But whenever you were filling it, when it clicked off, it would always spray gas back at you. What would cause that?
Yeah, that's not a terribly uncommon situation, and not just with Jeeps. What year is your current Liberty?
A 2006.
06, okay.
The first one was an 03, and they actually, under warranty, I got two gas caps, and they replaced all the fuel lines and everything, and it just still continued to do that.
Yeah. There was a period of time where I think Jeep was buying some hose that was used to vent the gas tank and all of the EVAP system, and that hose was not very good, and we would see those hoses cracking every place they were connected. And they use that hose to connect up hard lines to maybe metal lines and go around corners and things like that. And it was very common for that hose to crack. And you would get what's called today an EVAP leak, the evaporative system. And that would turn the check engine light on a vehicle that was newer than a 2006. I'm sorry, 1996. So that's part of the check engine light issue. As far as the gas spitting out when you fill it, there's also a valve that's in question. And it has to do with what's called the canister purge valve. And it is designed to open and shut when the computer commands it to use up those vapors instead of letting them go out into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And that valve can stick. And if it sticks, when the gasoline goes in the tank, the same volume of air needs to exit the tank during fill-up. And if that valve is not letting that pass, it will give the gas pump the indication that you're full when you really aren't, or it'll let it go way up the neck too far, and then when it hits the incoming fuel, it splatters out at you. So that's very likely or possibly what's going on there.
Yeah, it's just very annoying. I mean, I've kind of got it down to a science where I know where the gauge is and how much to put in it before it's going to do that.
So is your check engine light on in this current vehicle?
It goes on and off at will.
Have you ever had it scanned to see what the code is?
Yeah, and they have told me it's the gas cap.
Now that's with the computer, right?
The evaporative system codes can be very, very vague. They'll just give you an area of where the computer detected trouble. But sometimes diagnosing the cause is difficult because it doesn't tell you exactly. There's not a code that says gas cap. It'll be an evap leak, large leak, small leak. It may be, if it drives you crazy enough or if it reaches a point where you're really having trouble filling it up, you'll be forced to take it in and go a little further with it.
Yeah, at one time it was clicking off every few gulps of gas, you know, and that only happened like twice.
Oh,
and I was like, I didn't think I was going to even be able to fill it. It was just kept shutting off.
Yeah. It has to do with the valving, and those are electronically operated valves.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Hey, great. Thank you, Bonnie.
Yeah, bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Alan in Clifton Park. And Alan, you're on.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Okay, so my wife has a 2003 Ford Windstar, and it has this phenomenon where when it's super hot out and it's humid or lightly raining or foggy, if after the car's run a while and you go to turn it back on, like if you park at the mall and come back outside, it doesn't want to start, or it starts and runs for 30 seconds and dies, and it will go through that process for 10-15 minutes until it finally doesn't, and then you go on your way. And she feels that the air conditioning exacerbates that, and perhaps it's from condensation under the hood. But I mean, it's to the point where, like, you know, it's been repaired once. They said they swapped out a coil. But it didn't, you know, we still have that problem. Any thoughts? You ever heard of something like this?
Well, let me ask you this, Alan. When it doesn't want to start, is it cranking and cranking and cranking and cranking?
Yeah.
But you're hearing nothing, no firing or popping is it skipping and shaking like crazy once it starts?
It doesn't shake like crazy, but it does feel like, you know, like when you have a clogged fuel filter and it sputters. It sputters, basically.
And you're only having this happen after it's been driven for a significant period of time, and then you shut it off, go into, let's say, a store for an hour, then come out, then you're having the starting issues?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's usually not an hour. It's like after 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Okay. And is it worse in hot weather, are you saying?
I think it is, yeah.
What you very likely have going on is some dribbling, leaking down fuel injectors. In other words, when you shut the engine off,
right,
the fuel pump is stopped and the ignition system is cut and the engine stops running, but the fuel system remains under pressure. There's pressure from the check valve in the pump that's in the tank all the way up to the fuel injectors. And they might be sitting there at 50, 60 PSI.
Sure.
If the injector nozzles aren't sealing properly, they will drizzle out gasoline. It just like if you took a garden hose sprayer and just cracked it open a tiny, tiny bit.
Sure.
Picture that gas dribbling into the engine while you're in the store. You go out to start it. Now the engine is, in effect, flooded, and
right.
the fuel pressure is at zero. So it takes,
okay.
it takes time to build the pressure back up, and the engine's got to digest all that extra gas that's evaporating and lying around in there. So
right.
if I had to give you an educated guess what that could be, it could be leaking injectors.
Sure.
And
internally, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Into the combustion chamber,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, okay. yeah. So what you can do is a couple things. You can first try some very good additives in the gas tank. And,
okay.
and maybe give it a couple of doses. I use a product, and the chemical, I believe, it may be the trade name, but the chemical I think is Tecron. It was originally
okay.
Invented or developed by Chevron. And you can buy it in a bottle that says Chevron Tecron. And
okay.
It's very, very good, powerful cleaner. Give it a couple of back-to-back doses, you know, two tankfuls in a row. Follow the instructions. Just see if that doesn't help you out. It could clean up the dribbling injectors if that's what's happening and help solve the problem.
And so if I'm understanding you correctly, because there may be, so it does have like 114,000 miles. So if it may have some deposit or some sort of crud in the injector that's
sure.
not allowing it to seal up completely, that makes sense.
Very, very likely.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, I'm on it. That's that works for me. Thanks. I appreciate your time.
Hey, great. Thank you so
right,
much, Alan.
1-800-348-2551.
We're here talking cars with Gordon Fricke, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. Maria College, Albany, offering RN Baccalaureate Completion Program, Associate Degrees, and Professional Certificate Programs. Day, evening, weekend, and online classes. Aspire, achieve, become. MariaCollege.edu. Molly Cantor Pottery Studio and Gallery, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, featuring pottery with images of plants, animals, and New England life. Offering clay classes and gift certificates. MollyCantor.com. Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia, featuring a new kitchen and bath design center offering Starmark cabinetry, Cambria, and more. True Value. Start right. Start here. Mario'sTrueValue.com. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com.
One 800 348 2551. That's 1-800-TALK-1. And we are here on Vox Pop on this beautiful Thursday with Gordon Fricke, Barber and Fricke Automotive, talking cars. And we have Stephanie on the line from Kingston. Stephanie, you're on Vox Pop.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had two questions. I have an 1987 Toyota Camry, and a couple years ago, I went to have the AC recharged, and they had it, but I went again, they had the R12, they called it, but I went again, and they don't have it anymore. I guess it's not available. Where would I find it?
Well, R12 was the original automotive refrigerant. Probably
uh-huh.
goes back to the 40s or 50s, whenever they started putting air conditioners in cars. And it was determined that that was contributing to the breakdown of the ozone layer.
Uh-huh.
And starting with model year 1992, I believe, the R12 became unavailable. The government stopped production of it. And you're not the only one. Of course, there's the cars that still use it and have it in it are starting to decline quite a bit.
Right.
But if your air conditioning system is still in good shape, it can be converted to R134A, which is the refrigerant that replaced the 12. And back when the transition occurred, we changed tons of vehicles over. And at first, it was a big, scary thing, and it looked like we were going to have to replace compressors and all the hoses and all the components. And it basically would render the air conditioning system unusable on an older car. It just wasn't worth it. But mm-hmm. it turned out that it wasn't that big of a deal. So I think in your case, if your car is still good and you want to continue driving it, it's a nice car and you want the air to work, talk to your shop about converting it to R134A.
Okay.
And that's, it's not that terribly big of a deal.
Right. Okay, awesome. And I just have one more question.
Sure.
A couple of days ago, I think it was on Sunday, I started hearing a strange noise when I was turning my car to the right, but only a very right turn, a really hard turn. Nothing. I couldn't hear it when I was driving, but, I mean, the noise of the engine could have been overshadowing it as well. But it makes like a, like, I've never heard the noise before. It's like a squeaky, I don't even know how to describe it. Really squeaky, squealy. But only when I take a right turn, because I tested it taking a left, sharp left turn, and it doesn't make the noise. So, I took it to my shop, and he said it was a wheel bearing. But I don't always hear the noise. Even after I had it checked out, I don't hear it sometimes when I take hard right turns.
Now, when you hear this noise, are you traveling at any significant speed, or is this going into a parking space or going around a sharp 90-degree turn like in town?
I don't hear it. Let me try to describe it. Like, in my neighborhood, taking a right-hand turn from one side street to another side street, I have to be going a little bit faster.
Okay.
Definitely.
So you're not It's not like you're turning it to the extreme lock to get into a tight parking space. You're moving. You're going down the street with this.
Mm-hmm.
What's entirely possible is that maybe the brake shield is touching the brake disc or the rotor at certain times, and if it's more of a scraping, maybe a tinny type of a sound. It could be some rust building up on the brake surfaces, causing your rotor to hit the shield or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I get complaints about sounds like that only on certain turns and certain maneuvers, the wheel bearing thing, that is, you're going to hear that at higher speeds, and you're going to hear it when you change direction rather than go through sharp turns. And mm-hmm. it's going to be a real droning, almost like a, a lot of people say it sounds like it's an airplane going inside the car.
Yeah, no, it's not like that.
I think I'd be looking at a shield issue, a rust issue on the rotor, or something like that.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Hey, great. Thank you, Stephanie.
Bye.
All right. Let's go to Joe in Saratoga. Joe has an issue with his 97 Chevy. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you for taking my call. When I give it gas, especially quickly, it hesitates and pops. Once you back off the gas and slowly increase in speed and give it gas, it's okay. But if I am going up a hill in the wrong gear, I have to downshift to a lower gear and be very gentle with the gas. Just can't push it hard, or it'll pop and sputter.
Joe, what kind of vehicle is it? I see it's a Chevy. Is it a pickup truck?
Oh, it's a Chevy S10 pickup truck, 97.
Okay. It sounds to me like that might be what's called a lean pop, meaning that your fuel mixture is probably not quite rich enough. And that can occur from a number of different reasons. How does the truck run otherwise? If you're, let's say you want to go up a steep, long, hard hill, and you're almost to the floor. Do you get the impression that you're running out of gas, or does it pull strong and seem to run okay?
You would have to be in the lowest gear possible going up a steep hill, and you'd have to have the RPMs up high. If you were putting it under demand, like in, say, in third gear, trying to go up that hill, it would pop like crazy.
Okay.
So whenever you want to make it work hard, it pops. But once you or on the highway someplace, going 55 or 60, it seems okay.
Is your check engine light on?
It will come on if it pops a couple of times.
Yep.
If it pops hard a couple of times, it pops on. And then it'll go out a day or two later.
Has the fuel filter been changed at all recently?
I changed the fuel filter. I had my backyard mechanic replace the injectors, and still doing the same thing. Someone mentioned air sensor or something, but I don't know if it even has one.
I don't know if he's got the equipment or you know, how skilled he is, but a fuel pressure test would be a very good thing to do on this truck. because I got the feeling, I have the feeling that you're running too lean. And mm-hmm. the easiest thing to rule out would be the fuel filter, especially if it's old and got some miles on it. The other thing, though, is you need some equipment, you know, some fuel pressure gauges to see if the fuel pressure is below the spec or below where it should be. And that's mm-hmm. and that's going to make that engine act as though it's on the brink of running out of gas. And that popping is probably because of the leanness. And if you got it, if you were to get the computer scanned, it might indicate that you had a lean condition.
So
if it were me, I would be interested in knowing the fuel pressure, because that'll tell the whole story. If the fuel pressure is on the ragged edge of being low, and you've got a fresh filter on there, you either have a bad fuel pressure regulator or a bad fuel pump. And that will probably restore all your power. You'll probably think you have a new vehicle.
Okay. Well, that's great. Thank you very much.
All right. Hey, Joe, thank you so much. All right. Well, we have somebody writing in on email, voxpop@wamc.org. This is Ian. Says, I have a 2008 Honda Rebel, which just came out of storage. Before the winter, it says stabby, S-T-A-B-I. Does that mean any? I don't think. I think it means stable. Stable fuel was put in the tank?
Yes.
And the gas was drained. After riding it last weekend, gas is leaking out of the carb hose on the bottom. I think it's a valve sticking in the carb from what I found online. Is there an easy way to fix it? Hit it with a rubber hammer or add something to the gas tank? Something like that.
Patrick, this sounds like a motorcycle question.
I believe it is.
Yeah, Honda Rebel.
Okay.
And that situation is very common with carbureted engines when they sit over the winter, particularly after they've lived a few years. And carburetors are really a thing of the past on most everything now.
Okay.
Disappeared a long time ago on cars, pickup trucks. They stayed in lawn and garden equipment and motorcycles much longer. There was less restrictions on the emissions. But in any case, carburetors are a really old term nowadays.
Okay.
But what happens is in the carburetor, there is a thing called a float. And the float is there to measure how much gasoline is in this carburetor.
Is that literally a device that floats?
It actually floats in a little well of gasoline.
Okay.
And to reach the when the gasoline reaches the proper level, this float rises and shuts off a little valve that prevents any more gasoline from coming into the carburetor until it's needed. And that device is called a needle and seat. And I would say maybe because it's the gasoline is pouring out of the carburetor that the needle and seat is not shutting the fuel off. And when it reaches a certain point, there is a relief in the carburetor that allows the overflow to get out so it doesn't pour into the engine.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that he's going to need to get the carburetors disassembled, cleaned, and maybe some parts replaced, like those needle and seats and maybe some gaskets.
Okay.
If he's really lucky, a couple of mild taps with a hammer, not enough to break it, could jar something free in there, and it's worth a shot. You never know.
Just a regular old hammer or
a
rubber hammer?
That's going to be a small carburetor. I would do it with the handle of a screwdriver, hard plastic,
okay.
Yep. Bang, 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 bang
tap,
a bunch
tap,
of times.
Okay.
See if that calms it down. If he's really lucky, it'll dislodge something, and he'll be home free.
All right, great. Ian, you heard it here. Let's go to George in Troy. George, welcome to Vox Pop.
Yes, this is George.
Hello, George. Are you on the road now?
No, I'm not. Why? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we had a little, sounded like you were in a wind tunnel for a second. How you doing?
Good. I'm just calling about a 93 Chevy Lumina APV minivan.
Okay.
And recently I replaced the master cylinder and the power booster. And I had a friend of mine, with the help of my friend, we bled the old four lines. And the problem I'm having now is that when I'm driving and when I step on the brakes, the pedal gets stuck at the bottom. Like the vacuum, it's pulling the pedal to the bottom, even though I bled the brakes. I was just wondering what could cause that. Is it like a check valve problem, or is it some kind of leak, vacuum leak?
All right, George. So are you, when that pedal stays stuck down,
right,
are your brakes also on?
Yes. But what I do is, in order to disengage, I have to press all the way down real hard, and that relieves something, like as if like a relief valve or something.
So if you, let's say you put your toe under the brake pedal, could you lift it back up, or does that not accomplish it?
I guess I could. I didn't try it. Maybe I can.
Now what?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this: What prompted you to replace those parts to begin with? This same condition?
It sounded like the booster had a leak, vacuum leak in it. The power booster.
What was it? Rusted through? I mean, did you definitely have a leak there?
Yeah, it was the original booster.
Okay.
So,
how is the brake pedal otherwise? Is it right up where it should be? Does it feel normal? And when everything's up,
the way.
Pardon me.
Two-thirds of the way out. It's not where it should be.
It's not as high as you're used to it being?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't have that hard feeling to it when you're pressing on it. Yeah.
Bleeding brakes sometimes is way more difficult than it sounds to get all the air out of the system. And a lot of it has to do with how you bleed it. If you got a guy helping you inside pumping the pedal, that van probably has drum brakes in the back. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Another thing
maybe
that...
Maybe the pads on the drum brakes are low. Maybe that's why...
Well, drum brakes, if the adjusters fail to keep them adjusted properly, will give you a low pedal.
What about the pedal getting sucked down?
Well, I have a funny feeling that since that condition was not there prior to you changing that booster and master cylinder, did you get that as a complete unit? Sometimes they come together as one.
Well, I wanted to get it complete from Napa, but unfortunately they didn't have it, so I had to get it two parts, and I had to, on the bench, I did it exact the same way. Took the old one out, and I put it the same way as the old one.
Yep.
Was the two parts.
Here's what you can do. When your brake pedal is down by itself, if you can stop and leave it in that condition, go under the hood and take the vacuum line off of the booster.
That works, yeah. And, I tried it, and I also plugged the vacuum line, and I can drive it that way.
Yeah.
I
have a feeling you've got a faulty brake booster.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I thought the same thing.
Yeah, I think you may have just bolted on a problem that you didn't know you had. And sometimes we run into this a lot where we'll, in attempts to repair something, we'll run into a faulty part. And that's the last thing you're thinking about is, well, this thing, I just got it. It's brand new. But you have to be suspicious sometimes of the replacement parts. So I think maybe that pedal situation could be a faulty booster that you got.
So let me ask this. If this is a brand-new booster, what causes it to go fall? Is it a valve? Is it the check valve? Or?
Well, there's a valve in the booster, it senses what you're up to. In other words, when you depress the brake pedal, it moves a valve, and the valve says, okay, looks like the guy wants to put the brakes on, and we're going to help him do that, and it's going to add that vacuum to assist your pedal. But the minute you let up, it wants to immediately sense that and follow your instructions with your foot so it's not over-braking or under-braking. And I wouldn't be surprised if that valve in there is not doing the right thing. And it's applying brakes when you're not asking it to.
Exactly.
And that could be a little hairy, too. So I think I'd want to get that taken care of.
Yeah, I'm going to just take it back to Napa.
And then what I would do also is I would make sure your rear brakes are fully adjusted out the way they should be.
And well, I'm planning to do that over the weekend. I'm going to put new pads on the drum in the back.
George, we're losing you here. Yeah, I'm sorry, George. Hey, thanks so much for the call. Might want to get indoors next time you call in. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-TALK-1 is the number here. And I just want to talk for a second with Gordon about fuel additives. And I'm used to putting fuel additives in the winter.
Yeah.
Because I see the ISO heat or whatever it is that happens to be at the gas station. Now that it's getting warmer out, what kind of fuel additives are needed or...
Well, you know, those questions have come up on various shows regarding what to add to your gasoline nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy called maybe the last show or the show before, and he said, people have been telling me that because of the ethanol that's now in gasoline, we're at 10% ethanol, mm-hmm. and ethanol is alcohol.
Right.
Somebody told him there's no need to put dry gas in anymore. And there is a definitely an element of truth to that, because the ethanol is has hygroscopic properties. It's looking for moisture.
Okay.
It's looking to grab moisture and water, and it will absorb it, and it'll hold it, and then it'll allow it to get burned out the tailpipe. No harm done, unless there's way too much of it in there.
Okay.
And when way too much water gets into your gas, the ethanol, the 10% ethanol, gets oversaturated, and then they have a thing called phase separation, where the gasoline turns into the gas in your tank actually becomes two liquids.
Ah, okay.
A big blob of junk, heavily laden with water, full of alcohol. It's all white and cloudy, but it doesn't mix with the gasoline anymore.
Okay.
And that's bad, because the octane of the gas that it left behind is incredibly low, and it's full of water. And in extreme cases, you got to drain the tank and get rid of it.
It seize up the engine?
Well, it won't seize up the engine, but you can definitely be stuck. It may not run anymore, or may run terrible.
Okay.
So there is some stuff now that can go in there to handle the ethanol issues. And some of these products, there's one I use called Startron, and it's an enzyme treatment, and it's supposed to keep everything blended in suspension. And that's a really good additive to use now because of all the ethanol.
Okay, great. Hey, we're going to pick back up on this in a minute. 1-800-348-2551. We are here with Gordon Fricke talking cars on Vox Pop, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Albany Pro Musica, presenting Pops Goes the Chorus, a cabaret-style concert with show tunes and popular songs, June 7th and 8th at 7:30 p.m. at the Shaker Meeting House. AlbanyProMusica.org. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Woodstock School of Art, offering classes and workshops in drawing, painting, printmaking, sculpture, and more for all levels. Tuition assistance available. WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art, Facebook, or VisionExcelEyeCare.com.
1-800-348-2551. You're listening to Vox Pop on WAMC. We are here with Gordon Fricke, automotive expert, and it's the car show. And we got the calls coming in now. We have Jim in Lake George, wants to talk electric cars. How are you, Jim?
Hey, good. How are you guys today?
Great.
Good. I was looking at the Chevy Volt, and I'll be honest with you, I get confused by these ratings with the E and, 40 miles per gallon on one and 98 on another. So how do I know what that's going to be for my drive? How do I know what I'm going to be paying out of my pocket for gas? It's a little bit vague, don't you think?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because actual miles per gallon can vary so greatly. And it has a lot to do with driving style, where you're driving, seasonal changes. No car manufacturer tests their cars in the middle of the winter on winterized fuel with soft tires and maybe a 400-pound driver. You know, they optimize everything. And I have a friend of mine that has a Volkswagen TDI diesel Jetta, and he is jumping for joy, because now that the winter fuel is gone, he's getting in the 50s. He got 57 miles per gallon the other day.
Very nice.
And he was trying his absolute hardest to get the best economy instead of driving hard, because those cars have great power. They drive like a normal car. So back to your question, if your question is in regarding a Chevy Volt specifically, I don't have enough information on that to tell you what they're going to be doing for you as far as actual economy goes. And the Chevy, and I'm not sure, you know, how much of that. I mean, there is an engine on there. I don't know how much that's used. You know, I don't know how much gasoline you got to put in there and how much it's burning up depending on your driving style. I mean, what have you heard about it?
Well, I've looked online, and, you know, again, basically the same thing you're saying. I mean, they do tests, consumer reports and such, and it can be 40 miles a gallon, it can be 60, it can be 80. And, you know, I drive a Civic now, and that's, you know, whatever, between, at least I know it's between, like, 28 and 35. So I got a pretty good idea of, you know, where my range is going to be. But if I'm going to invest and put, you know, 40 grand, 35 grand into a car, plus have to look for all the things to plug it into and everything else, I just think it's shameful they don't have a more exact feel for what the mileage would be. I mean, this is a huge – that's like saying, you know, hey, you want to buy a new TV, it's either going to be $300 or $7,000.
Yeah.
And I just think there should be better – I don't want to call restrictions, but kind of better regulations on what I'm getting into for that amount of money.
Yeah,
I mean, is there anything coming down the pipeline on that?
I don't know if there is, but your question is quite valid because we service some vehicles from a local company, and for a while they had two or three hybrid sport utilities, Mercury Mariner and a Ford Escape, same vehicle. And the type of driving that they did not lend itself to making those cars worthwhile in terms of payback. You know, what it cost over and above the normal vehicle like that wasn't a hybrid, and, you know, the cost of the vehicle and the type of economy it was delivering, it didn't really work for them. So you got to kind of think about the way you drive and where you drive, and it's a tough decision, you know. So I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think there's any agency or group that right now is saying, look, let's get a handle on this and give people some pretty accurate numbers, you know.
Hey, Jim, there you go. Maybe you could start that that consumer group. Stay tuned, will you?
Thanks so much.
Yep, take
Thanks,
care.
Guys.
Yep.
Great to talk to you.
All right, so electric cars. I mean, is the infrastructure there for electric cars yet?
Not really.
Really?
Well,
right.
The United States is so vast, and there are so many miles of highway where you're not having the option to plug in everywhere and charge up and all that. Europe has been in a high gas price situation almost forever after World War II. So they know what it's like to build vehicles that get the greatest economy. They're small cars. They have little engines. Their driving style is way different than ours. Some of my family's in Germany, and when I go visit, when I'm with my uncle, we pull up to let's say there's a train coming, stops, immediately shuts the engine off.
Wow.
And second nature. I don't know how many people do that.
Yeah, I'm going to guess.
Around here.
Not very many.
So, you know, so that has a lot to do with it.
Very interesting. All right, let's go to Casey in Albany. Casey, how are you? You're on Vox Pop.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
What do you got?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Oh, yeah, I just was wondering about what your opinion was on coasting in neutral, if any effects it might have on your vehicle.
What kind of car do you have?
I have a 98 Volvo S70.
We've gotten that question. Yeah, we've gotten that question before, and I don't know if there is that great of a payoff in doing that. Maybe minutely, because
I do know that the engine, you know, is still going as if you were idle and everything, and so I mean it would be the same output that the engine is giving. But if you're going on a decline, you're going to be making a lot. You're going to speed up a lot by the less resistance on whatever part
Correct.
Of the gears or whatnot.
Yes, you will definitely coast further with it in neutral rather than in drive. Interesting thing that comes up with a lot of cars today, and we've had this question before. Most cars today do this thing that when you're decelerating, down the long hill, and your foot's been off the gas pedal for a certain period of time, the computer watches it and says, okay, this guy's on a long coast. We're going to shut all the fuel injectors off. So it shuts the fuel down. So now you're coasting, burning zero gasoline. although you're still, the engine is still being turned by the momentum of the car, you're not going to coast as far, but the engine's off. So if you coast in neutral, the engine's on and idling, what you may save by going a little further, you may lose because your engine didn't shut off.
Mm.
So I think it would be hard to measure any benefit to doing that. It's not harmful to the vehicle, but I don't know if there's really much benefit to it.
As far as for fuel, it's about a zero sum.
I'm thinking. I don't know. I don't think it's a major, major saving maneuver.
Is that purely with like newer vehicles, or the, a 98 would still have?
Well,
that?
Some of the car makers had that going on in the 80s. And I had early experience with Volkswagen and Audis, and they did have fuel shut off on deceleration in the 80s on a lot of their models. So whether your Volvo has it or not, I'm not sure. I can't tell you for sure if it does.
All right, okay. Casey.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks so much for the call. All right, let's go to Dustin. Dustin's in the Berkshires. Dustin, welcome to Vox Pop.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I got a semi-quick question regarding my Ford Freestyle 2005. Just recently, within the past, I would say, 6 months or so, I've been getting a fail-safe engine regarding, I guess, the throttle body. I've taken it to some mechanics, and that's what they've said. Basically, they've offered to clean it. There was a recall recently asking me to take it back into the dealer to have them professionally clean it and so on. Doing some research myself, the cleaning's pretty easy, but I guess what my question is I'm unable to pinpoint when it actually goes in failsafe, because every time I clean it, it seems to work maybe for a day, and then it goes, starts going back into failsafe mode. It doesn't happen often, but it's kind of inconvenient, if you will. If you're driving or whatever, it'll just shut the failsafe. You got to turn off to the side of the road, turn the car off, start it back up, and it starts fine. But is there any... I know this is probably common with this type of vehicle, but is there any way to pinpoint when this is going to do it, or what makes it actually fail safe like this?
Yeah. The cleaning, if it's done properly, and if your issue is regarding a dirty throttle plate or throttle body, that problem will have been resolved and it wouldn't keep coming back. So the first step is always to clean it. And then if your symptoms reappear, you more than likely have an electronic problem. And the problem could be in the throttle unit itself, because you have an electronic throttle. What you're pressing inside the car, which used to be called the gas pedal, is just a variable resistor. And it's telling the computer where you want the engine to be, and it's following your request within parameters. So it could be you've got a throttle body beginning to fail, and you'll probably have to replace that thing sooner or later, because it may not come back one of these days when you pull over.
Gotcha.
So I would go deeper with it and make sure you're not looking for, you know, you're not heading for a breakdown.
Gotcha. And then one other weird thing is, it seems to work fine. Oh, you know, it doesn't really accelerate as it used to, but it seems to work fine in cruise control, which is very interesting, because I can accelerate and decelerate with it in cruise control without it fail-safing. But if I try to use the pedal, that's when it tends to not accelerate or fail-safe after a while.
Yeah, very, very interesting thing that you discovered, because the fault can also lie in the accelerator pedal assembly.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that's where your shop is going to do the testing to determine which it is. Is it the accelerator unit, or is it the throttle body out on the engine? So yeah, that was a good thing for you to discover.
Yeah, and then one really brief, quick last thing.
Go ahead, Dustin.
How extensive is replacing the throttle body? Because I mean, I've done some work on the car before. Is it a difficult thing to do if I buy the throttle body, or would you recommend actually having it taken to somebody that can necessarily do it?
Yeah.
I mean, I know where it's located and everything, but I don't know.
Well, here's the only fear. Let's say you replace the throttle unit or the throttle body assembly, and it turns out to be the pedal assembly. You just spent a ton of money on something you didn't need.
Gotcha.
I would take it in.
All right.
All right.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey, Dustin, thanks so much for the call. And this looks like it's probably going to be our last, if not second to last, call. Lynn in New Ashford in your BMW. Welcome to Vox Pop.
Yes. Hi. I have a 98 BMW 323i convertible. And my concern is more cosmetic than mechanical. Between the top, the outer top, and the inner liner, I'm getting sheets of crinkly plastic coming out the sides, and I'm wondering if this is something I need to worry about, if I'm going to experience any moisture damage as a result, or can I just ignore it?
Well, yeah, that, your car has what I believe is a three-ply top. You've got the outer skin that you see from the exterior of the car. You've got the headliner and the inside, and then you've got a layer in between, which may be comprised of some sound deadening material and some plastic. I don't think you're going to be getting water coming through the roof because of that inner liner coming apart. Is it coming out in big pieces, or are you just seeing little shavings here and there?
No, there's like maybe 6-inch, 8-inch, 4-inch pieces that will eventually work out the sides mm-hmm. between the headliner and the top, and I just pull them loose.
Yep.
And they're all dried and aged and cracked and crinkly. So
I think what I would do is, if the appearance inside and outside is not deteriorating, as you get into rainstorms with the car, just be very aware of it and just see if you think there's any. See, the rain barrier is not on the inside necessarily, because that would trap moisture between the two layers. I think you're probably okay just keeping an eye on it, and maybe ask, I don't know if the dealer would have information on that or not, but maybe it wouldn't hurt to call a BMW dealer and just say, this is what's happening. Am I okay, or is there trouble coming? Just to be on the safe side.
Okay, that sounds like a plan, and I thank you very much, and you have alleviated some of my concerns.
Well, glad we could help. Thanks so
Wonderful
much for
show.
The call.
Wonderful show. I love your show.
Thank you.
Your show is great. Thank you so
much. Thank you very much, Lynn. All right. Well, we're coming to the home stretch here. Gordon, if there are, let's say, are there any top three or top five things? Let's say I'm getting ready for a long road trip to warmer climates. What should I do to my vehicle?
As far as what you should have checked?
Sure.
Well, tires, of course, are very important on any type of trip and any type of driving. And it's not only the depth of the tread that needs to be looked at. Cracking needs to be checked, weather checking, inside and out. If you're feeling any shimmies or vibrations, it might just be a rebalance or a rotate, but you don't want tire trouble on a trip.
Right.
So that's a good thing. Belt condition, very good thing to look at, because we don't have belts squealing anymore. So you don't get that warning that there's problems. Sometimes the big fat drive belt, if it's never checked, you take it for granted, and if it does break, you're stranded, because that belt runs everything.
Okay.
So I think it would be good to get under the hood, check belts, check for leaks, fluids, tire pressures, tire conditions. A good mechanic can just kind of eye up a lot of stuff and rule out a lot of trouble in a fairly short period of time.
Okay. Well, Gordon Fricke is our car guy. He's here once a month. Gordon, how can people get in touch with you?
I can be reached by phone. And you want me to give the number?
Sure.
Yeah, it's 518-686-4575. I do have email, and if you ask Ray, I'm not always the most attentive at checking it. But it is GORDONF, the letter F is in Fricke,
mm-hmm.
At symbol Barber, B-A-R-B-E-R, F-R-I-C-K-E .com. But I'm a little old school, so I don't
So don't
live,
take it personally if they don't get right back
I
on
don't
the email.
Live on email and media.
Got it.
Although my daughter Emma here tries to keep me up to date, and I was going to put her in as a standby in case I couldn't make it
Got
through
it.
The show. That's why I brought her here today.
Got
but
it.
And you when Ray's not here, so I guess we survived it.
Yeah, I think we made it through. I think we made it through all right. Well, we are just about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to Clark, and there's a couple other people who didn't make it on the line. Call back next month, and we'll get you on. Thank you to Gordon Fricke for stopping by. Support for Vox Pop comes from Ashokan Center in Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com, and Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring an assortment of plants, flowers, and landscaping tools and products, Monday through Sunday, 8 to 5, a gardener's destination, StoriesNursery.com. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Brandon Holmes, his first day on the job, for answering the phones today. For Ray Graff, I'm Patrick Donges. Tomorrow, Moyers & Company in this hour. Next week, we will have Medical Monday. Stay tuned now for a news update. And remember, feed the lockbox, WAMC.org.